Standing in for Rifilo and Pakanyane.
This is 702 Weekend Breakfast
with Gugs Mhlungu.
Live,
online,
smartphones,
DSTV,
92.7
and 106 FM.
14 minutes after 8 o'clock, you are still on Weekend Breakfast with me, Gugs Mhlungu. Time for us to get into our profile interview. And as mentioned, we're joined by popular South African actress, model, businesswoman, singer, Gail Mabelane. You might know her from The Wild. You might also know her from The Road. You might know her from Netflix's Blood and Water. Her latest acting role is in a newly released local film, Indemnity. It came out on Friday. So if you're looking to support local film or looking for a local feature, you can catch that at your cinemas. And she joins us this morning as our profile. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. What is your favorite role by Gail? You can give us a call on 011-883-0702 or send us an SMS on 31702 or send us a WhatsApp on 072-702-1702. Gail, good morning. Welcome to Weekend Breakfast.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you so much for having me, Gugs.
Thank you for having us. So you have a new film that opened on Friday, a film called Indemnity. Tell us about the film.
Yeah, so this is very exciting for me. It is my first feature film. So my first film I got to see on the big screen. My first feature film and the first one that makes it to cinema.
Mm-hmm.
It's an incredible film. It really follows, the lead who is played by Jared Gedult, Theo Abrams, who is a firefighter. What is really great about the film, I heard you talk a little bit about violence, in your interview prior to mine. And obviously it's an action film. I think it's one of the best action films coming out of South Africa. It is an incredible film, incredibly shot. We have great stunts. And one of the ones that I know all of us are very proud of is our lead hanging out of like a 22-story building, out of the window of a 22-story building.
Yeah.
So it is an incredible film. And what I really love about it is, apart from the fact that it's action filled and on the edge of your seat, and a lot of it's obviously a thriller as well. But it's also underlying, there's some real human issues that are being dealt with. Theo goes through your experiences, PTSD. So it speaks to trauma. It speaks to, overcoming. It speaks to family. There's a lot of, it's not just Skopskiet en Donner, as we'd say in Afrikaans. There's depth to it, which I really love about the film.
Mm. And you play Detective Renee Williamson. Tell us about that character. What drew you to her? Was she the character that you had auditioned for?
Yes, so she was the character that I'd auditioned for. And what I really loved about this opportunity was, this is my first Afrikaans role. I think a lot of people don't know that I'm fluent in Afrikaans. But coming from Kimberley and having grown up, speaking the language, it's something I've never explored. And this was an opportunity for me to tap into that side. She plays the cop who investigates the death of Theo's wife. So his wife is murdered, and we go on this journey to try and figure out who murdered her. Was it her husband? So she plays the cop, but it's also amazing to watch her journey as she tries her best to stay on the right side of the law as a law-abiding citizen and an honorable cop.
Yeah. You say this is your first feature film that you have been in. And I mean, you've done numerous other, projects, Blood and Water for Netflix, The Wild, The Road. But what was the difference? What was your experience of working on a feature film? What is the, was that a lot more different to what you'd done before?
Not really. I think, obviously I've worked on soap, which is a very different approach compared to like your series. Soaps being more long form, so you have a lot more time to film and it's a lot more laid back. But because I've done like a Blood and Water, which is a 6-part series and also filled with a lot of drama and high-paced stuff. And so, and also Gambit, the same production company that did Blood and Water, did Indemnity. So it wasn't very different. It was very similar to filming a series. And I guess, it was just I was in, I filmed Blood and Water in Cape Town. I filmed Indemnity in Cape Town. So the difference was not much. I guess it's just, you know, for me, speaking to the Afrikaans audience with this particular role, and then working with a whole new cast, which is incredible. I mean, everyone on the film is amazing.
And I mean, for the viewer, when we watch action films, we always wonder kind of how, you know, things are pulled off. You were saying, for instance, your lead hangs out of, is it the 22nd floor of a building? And I'm always interested, what goes into, you know, putting together an action scene, the sort of the Skopski Dindonor? You know, like, do you get special training? Do you, you know, do you have to kind of learn? Because it always looks real, but obviously it's not. So what goes into putting together an action sequence or an action film?
I think for me in particular, as a cop having to prepare for this film, I had, I went through some training, you know, on how to hold a gun and, you know, spending some time with cops and just being exposed to that world in order for me to, you know, be able to embody the character and be able to know how to hold, a gun. I know that, Jared, who plays the lead, has spent a tremendous amount of time preparing for the character emotionally, physically, psychologically. And he worked with a team of, you know, stuntmen to help him get to a place where, because, I mean, he does all his own stunts. You know, there isn't a stuntman for him. So he's the one hanging out of the building and he's the one doing the fight sequences. And obviously that comes with a lot of preparation, a lot of training, you know, physical training, spending time with the stuntman. And I mean, shooting, hanging out of a building, you can imagine, it's first of all like almost a whole day, you know, that we set aside to film something like that. I mean, he's literally hanging by a curtain and there's a team of people around him, you know, obviously making sure that it happens and it looks, you know, 100% real and it's believable, which it is. He is literally hanging out of a window. So it depends. I mean, there's a lot of explosions and, you know, the film is just so full of I mean, you literally sit on the edge of your seat. Everyone who's seen the film has really enjoyed the action side of things, because I don't think we've seen that before in South Africa.
Yeah.
A film like that being made before in South Africa.
And for you, Gail, what was the thing that drew you to the entertainment business? When did you realize or when did you decide that entertainment was the thing you wanted to do?
Sure. I don't know, actually. I grew up, I mean, when I was 5 years old, my mom entered me into Miss Tinkerbell, which is a talent competition, and it's really just meant to, you know, help build my confidence. I'm generally very shy. I still am. But I think I was worse at five, very reserved. And so she entered me. It was, Miss Tinkerbell, and you just had to come with a talent and wear the clothes at the store, that were in the store. And I think that sort of sparked something, because it helped me start to build confidence, and that's how I got into pageants and just growing in my confidence and being confident in my own skin and being confident as a woman. And that just grew. And I'd actually entered a couple of competitions, and then my mom and my brother passed away, and then I lived back home in Kimberley with my dad. And I think like 4 years later, I just woke up and went, I think I'm okay. You know, I'm ready to try this thing again. And that's how I left Kimberley. Well, I entered Idols and then made it to the top 10, so left Kimberley. And then after getting voted off Idols, after the top 10, I stayed in Joburg for a little while, trying to, you know, build relationships, get to know people. At the time, I'll be honest to say, I didn't really know what it was I wanted to do. I just really was drawn to the entertainment industry. It wasn't clear as day to say, well, you're going to sing or present or act. So when I got voted off, I happened to hear about the auditions for The Wild that were happening, because you know, The Wild was on the same channel as Idols. And I thought, let me give it a shot and let's see how it goes. And then I got the role without, you know, having had any acting experience, any formal training. And so I just threw myself 110% into that. I started working with an acting coach who I still work with today. And I just decided to focus on that. You know, they say that he who chases two rabbits catches none. So this was a rabbit that I had caught, and I decided this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to run with it. And I fell in love with the industry, and now this is where I am.
Yeah. When you entered Idols, did you anticipate that you would get that far? When you were entering, because obviously there is this huge competition that go around the country, what were your expectations?
Yeah. I think for me, I was very intentional about meeting people, getting to know people in the industry. So as much as I entered, I was the one who spent time, who would go out of my way to speak to people behind the scenes that were working on the show, you know, like forging relationships. Like, so what do you do on the show? No, I'm the producer or I'm the director. And, you know, just really, I think I was intentional. I didn't necessarily, I'll be honest, I didn't really believe, or let me say, it wasn't really about winning. It was about a platform. It was about getting an opportunity to be seen, because as much as I wanted to be in the entertainment industry, I'm from Kimberley. I don't live in Joburg. So I couldn't just pack up and come to Joburg and hope for the best. I knew that it was important for me to go with something in my hand that I could work with. So I live in Kimberley, so I drove to Bloemfontein, which is about a two-hour drive from Kimberley. And that's where I entered and you know, queued from like 4 o'clock in the morning or something like that. Mm. And I just knew that I had to be intentional. So throughout the competition, when I made it to the 32, when we go to Sun City, I was just building relationships. And that's how I found out that the auditions were happening, you know, for the Wild, because I had spent time with people behind the scenes. I wasn't just focused on, I mean, of course, when you're in it, you want to win the competition, but you also can't be short-sighted. And you know, I knew at the time that I wasn't the best vocalist on the show on that season. So it was really just about making the most of what I had, because I know what it costs to put anything on television. So to then have the platform where you can be seen on television, how am I going to make that work? How am I going to make it count? How is it going to go beyond just getting voted off and going back to Kimberley? They booked my flight back to Kimberley when I got voted off, and I didn't board the flight. I called my uncle. I said, I need to stay in Joburg for a few weeks, and I did, and I called, is there anything, you know, can I come in and watch the rest of the show? Can I, you know, just really going out of my way to be visible.
Yeah. And so when you make that decision that, you know, you're not going back to Kimberley, you're actually going to stay and try figure it out. And, you know, this idea of kind of being intentional. Did you have any kind of guidance on what that would look like? Or was your plan to, I'm here and I'm just going to, did you have someone you could rely on? Did you have someone you could call? Or was it all just you figuring it out in this new city?
Yeah, no. I'd been to Joburg before. I'd done a couple of competitions. You know, I'd won with Kaiser Chiefs in Joburg. I'd entered Miss City Press, so I'd been exposed to Johannesburg. And I've got family. I've got my aunts and my uncles. There wasn't anybody in the industry that was sort of holding my hand and helping me figure it out. But what I knew was I need to strike while the iron is hot. I just got voted off, and when you get voted off, you get invited for interviews and, you know, come and tell us about your journey on Idols and, you know, which is what I stayed behind to do. And then I just decided it doesn't make sense for me to go back home, because that is, it would be ridiculous to waste all the airtime I'd gotten to just give up and say, well, that didn't work out, so let me go back home. So I stayed, and I literally called around, and, you know, I had met a lot of people. You know, the industry is actually not as big as one would think. So just by being on Idols, I had met people, producers and people behind the scenes who actually, interestingly enough, throughout my career, I've seen on other sets and they have shot other things. So because I was obviously on Idols, and I had built relationships with the PR person or the producers here and there, I got wind of the Wild, which happened really quickly. I think it happened within a month after I got voted off. Mm-hmm. Within a month I got voted off, I heard about the auditions, and I went not knowing what it was I was doing. I mean, I literally only knew Action and Cut at that time, you know, so I showed up to the audition really just trusting I would remember my lines, and I did my audition, and then, you know, a few days later found out that I got the role. So, and then started working towards just getting better and stronger and more confident.
And when you auditioned for the role of, was Lelo Sidibe the role you'd auditioned for, or was that the other role that you'd gotten? Was she who you wanted to play?
Well, I didn't even know who else there was. That's the role I auditioned for. That's the role I was asked to audition for, and I auditioned for it. So I didn't audition for anyone else.
Mm. And I know you were saying that once you got the role, you then got an acting coach that you still work with. But before then, how were you honing your skills? How were you kind of practicing? Or were you just using kind of your innate talent for entertainment?
Yeah, I think, you know, when I got the audition, when I got the role, I think the producers and directors saw something they could work with. So I led with that, understanding that there is something there. And I think more than anything, the talent probably has always been there. I just had to start, you know, gaining confidence within myself. And I think that took years. I think that it's only now in my late 30s that I'm super confident in what it is I have to offer. I think before, you know, you do go through a season where you feel like a bit of an imposter. You feel like, I'm not sure if what I'm doing is right. I'm not sure if it's believable. And it's stuff that I needed to work through throughout my career. And I think as a performer, I don't think you ever get to a place where you feel you have arrived. It's a constant journey of being better, being more secure in who you are, in your own skin. Yes, I immediately started working with my acting coach, immediately worked with her for months. And there isn't a show that I've been on that I haven't worked with her on. And I think it's more just being able to bounce ideas around and being able to, you know, go through a script and break it down with somebody and be confident that, you know, when you go on set, you've done the work and you're not trying to figure out or find the character on set, but you actually have done the work in the background and you arrive on set and you're prepared with whatever journey your character's on or whatever emotional arc they're on. Mm. And you're able to bring that character to life and those emotions to life.
Yeah.
And I don't ever want to get to a place where I feel that I don't need to do that before a scene.
Yeah. We're joined on the line by Gail Mabelane. You know her from productions like The Wild, Rockville, Generations, The Road, Blood and Water, and now a new action film from a local action film called Indemnity. She joins us this morning as our profile, and we take your calls for Gail on 011-883-0702. We take your SMSs on 31702, and you can send us your WhatsApp messages on 072-702-1702. Do you have a particular performance that you've seen, a show of Gail's that you've watched that you really enjoyed? I'd love to hear which show it is, or the first time you encountered Gail's work. We'd love to hear from you about that as well. But it is 29 minutes before 9 o'clock. Time for us to check in with your latest EWN sport.
702
Weekend Breakfast with Gugs Mhlungu,
standing in for Refilwe Mphakanyane on 702
live,
online,
smartphones,
DSTV
92.7
and 106 FM.
702. Let's walk the talk.
It's 24 minutes before 9 o'clock. You are still on Weekend Breakfast with me, Gugs Mhlungu. And we're in our profile interview. If you've just joined us, we're joined on the line by actress, media personality, businesswoman, and singer Gail Mabelane. She joins us as our profile this week. On Friday, she a new film called Indemnity, an action thriller, local action thriller, was launched in cinemas, and she stars in that film, and she joins us this morning to speak about her career in the South African entertainment business. Gail, just before we went to sport, you were talking about how, you know, in 2010, you get to the top 10 of season 6 of Idols. You get voted off, and instead of going home, you stay in Johannesburg. You audition for a new show that's going to start airing called The Wild. You get the role of Lelo Sidibe. And what happens after that? Do you then stay in Joburg?
Yes, I stayed. I mean, I knew that I think we were given dates on when we would start filming. Was able to go home and see my dad before coming back then to film. But the intention when I left Kimberley, for Idols, was that I'm not coming back, you know, at least not to stay. You know, I mean, Kimberley is home and it'll always be. I go very often, but I made a decision at the time that I was going to go and try and push to get something done because I wasn't working at the time. I had a business that I was running that with my dad that, you know, that was doing okay, but I wasn't really doing anything that was feeding my growth as a person and where I felt like I wanted to go. So I stayed in Johannesburg for a little while with my uncle and his family and got the role. And we started, I think very soon after getting the role, started, you know, being paired up with the rest of the actors and then doing script readings. And, you know, it was actually very well done in terms of how the preparation was done. Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity to be exposed to some of the greatest actors in the country. And so we were often spent time away in the bush to go and read the scripts and meet each other and get to know each other and really get comfortable. So by the time we stepped onto set, I pretty much met everyone and gotten to know everyone and felt very comfortable, and everyone just welcomed me. As this newcomer in the industry, I think I had one of the best introductions to the industry because it was very cushioned, it was very protected. I felt like really just older siblings, you know, welcoming me to the industry and guiding me and holding my hand, and, you know, obviously also working with my acting coach. It made me feel a lot more confident in being able to perform. But it was scary. It was very scary the first couple of weeks, you know, because I haven't been to drama school.
Mm-hmm.
So walking onto set and not knowing what half the people there are doing, why are there so many people on set? What is this one's job? What happens in between takes? Why is there a focus puller? Why is there that? So I literally learned on the job. But it was a very comfortable learning experience because I had incredible people around me.
Yeah, because that was going to be my next question. This is kind of your first job in the industry. And I know there was quite a bit of buzz when there was announcement that The Wild was coming, you know, this ensemble cast. So, you know, it's not as if you were able to kind of start off with, I guess, a small show or a small role.
Yeah.
You kind of start on, you know, there was quite a lot of attention with, you know, people who had been in the industry for a while. And, you know, I wonder, you know, what that experience was like for you. Now you were on a working set. And how you kind of adjusted, you know, what were some of the things you didn't expect that suddenly you were having to learn on the job?
Yeah, it was, from, you know, auditioning to keeping calm, you know, around people that you have watched and admired, you know, for a big part of your life. And now you get to work alongside them and not just as somebody who maybe comes on with a small role, but your characters are literally on par in terms of what is expected of the show. And I mean, I'm very grateful that the introduction, you know, to the likes of Sid Corney and Mr. Show and, you know, Dumi Show and Lil Dwaba and, you know, Sis Clementine, it was just an incredible group of people that I got to be introduced to. And I think they really were very, I just felt like I was at home. I didn't feel any kind of pressure that I was less than or that I didn't, you know, have the experience. And I think also one of the things that I had to take time to acknowledge was that for me personally, you know, I'm a spiritual person. So I know that it wasn't in my own strength. There is no way I could audition for a role with no experience. Yes, maybe with, you know, a gift that's there, but that even me being placed on the show and getting the role was bigger than myself. It was bigger than what I could have made happen in my own strength. So I know that God who put me there was going to give me the ability to draw from the places I needed to draw from to make this role a reality. And that's what I leaned on, was that I auditioned, yes, great, but I don't know how I got this job. I really don't, you know.
Yeah.
I attribute it to favor and really just God placing me there. And so he will make it work through me. And then I had the support of the rest of the cast. And that in itself was also just a blessing that I'm very grateful for.
Do you remember when you realized that you were now someone that the public recognized or that you were a public figure? Because obviously you would have been on Idols, and that's huge in terms of viewership and people watch the show. But now, you know, you started doing television, and we know how big TV is in South Africa. You went on to do, in addition to, you know, The Wild, you did Rockville, you did Generations. But was there a moment where you realized that you were now someone that the public recognized, that someone, you were someone that, you know, if you were in the shops or at the airport, someone, you know, they kind of came up to you, or you could see that they recognized you from somewhere?
Yeah. I don't know if there was a particular moment that stands out where I went, oh my goodness, this is it. Because I think the Idol platform almost prepares you for that, because we do sort of road shows, for lack of a better word, you know, back then we did. Where while being on the competition, we would take a drive to a mall, and there'd be an activation there, and you have to meet people and take pictures. And even after the show or before the show, we would take pictures with the audience. Obviously some would prefer, or they support you in the competition, so you take pictures with them, or they call you and you take pictures. So by the time I left the Idol stage, I almost had a sense of what that felt like. And I guess having done pageants and having done one with Kaiser Chiefs, can I also just say that they haven't crowned anyone after me? It's been 22 years.
Really?
Yeah, which is incredible. But winning that, and then, you know, being sort of the center of attention I was 16 when I won, going on 17. I was in my matric year when I won Miss Kaiser Chiefs, and then being attending games and taking pictures and, you know, visiting the local club, the Kaiser Chiefs club. So I think to a degree I was prepared for that in my you know, earlier days, and then winning, then making it to the top 10 in Idols. I think we got introduced to that, so it pretty much just felt like it got more, but as it got more, I had the ability to embrace that. It didn't feel like this huge shock. And I guess also being married to Kabelo is like, you know, you get introduced to that. I mean, I met him a year after I started on The Wild. So then his life also, when he's in public, being asked for pictures. So I think I've always been sort of introduced in that world where, I don't think there's a particular moment that stands out where I went, oh gosh, this is it. It's happening.
Yeah. We do have Mpo in Pretoria. Mpo, good morning. Welcome to Weekend Breakfast.
Morning, good. How are you?
We're very well, thank you, Mpo.
Well, I've been listening to El Mabalani's story. It's so touching. Kimberly up to where she is now. And I would like to say she and her husband share such an inspiration, and I look up to them. She's an inspiration, and I would like to say big up to her. Hello?
Yes, yes. Look, I can hear you.
Yeah, I guess that's my comment for the day.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I think, you know, the line wasn't 100% clear, but thank you. You know, I think if I understood him correctly, he said basically just thank you for being an example.
Yes.
Did I get that correctly?
Yes, that you and your husband are a source of inspiration to him.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much, and Paul. We appreciate that. And I think that, you know, I go through my life and look at people that I met, like, you know, Sis Cons and Mr. Show and them that I started with, on all the people that I started with on The Wild. And I draw inspiration, or I drew inspiration and continue to draw inspiration from people like them and many others in the industry. So I know the importance of having somebody to look to and go, yeah, this is encouraging. You know, the story is encouraging. So I really appreciate that, and Paul, thank you.
And I know you were saying a little bit earlier on when we started chatting that you were quite a kind of a private person. And, you know, suddenly you, not only are you kind of a public figure, but you know, for Mpo, for instance, or many people, suddenly your relationship is something people want to hear about, or something people are interested in, or, you know, there is this great interest in your personal life. And, you know, how do you manage that? That while you are public figures and people may be interested in your life, that it is also, you know, your personal life. And so how have you managed that, that being kind of a well-known couple with this great interest in your lives, but also, you know, still being, your life is your life?
I think from the very beginning of our relationship, we were very intentional about keeping it as private as possible. It's very hard to have a relationship in the public eye. So we made that decision from the beginning that we didn't want any outside influences. I mean, we want to be able to date and make sure that this is what we want without any influences from anyone. We dated for 2 years and managed to keep that sort of under wraps and got married. I mean, we had an attempt. I mean, there was a few people that wanted to cover, you know, the wedding and for it to be televised and all that. And we just really felt like it was a private moment. And I think throughout our marriage, I mean, we've been married for 9 years. We've been together 11 years. And we've just made very conscious decisions about keeping stuff, some of our marriage or some of our lives to ourselves.
Mm.
Like everything doesn't have to be publicized or everything doesn't have to be in the public eye. You know, we've got kids now who are also our responsibility. And we've had, for example, to make a very conscious decision to be able to say no in public, for example, when we are with our kids and people ask us for pictures. Because I've had moments before that decision where people would come up and take a picture and my children were younger and I had to put them down to take a picture.
Hmm.
And it didn't make me feel like that was the right thing to do. And we made a decision to be able to, you know, very respectfully decline a picture when we are with our children, because at that point we are parenting, you know, we are human beings in that moment, just being mom and dad, and it's important to protect our children also in that regard. So I think we've been able to keep what's public, private, and where there is an opportunity to share, we do share. But I mean, at the end of the day, we are human beings with, you know, human issues that we face on a daily basis. There's nothing special about the lives that we live other than that it is, you know, in the public eye only because of the work we do.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it is there's nothing different except that my work is public. You know, there's nothing special except that the work that I do gets to be watched. But for me as an individual, I'm still very human, having very human experiences, you know, on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And I think I've been able to lean into that and not think of, I think us as a couple and even me as myself, think of myself as anything larger than what I am. You know, I don't think my life is any different from any other woman, except that it is public. And I think because it's public, it comes with all the other things that it comes with. But honestly, I'm sitting here, I'm in Cape Town, busy shooting season 3 of Blood and Water. And my family is back home and I'm having a human experience. Like, it's Sunday. I wish I could cook a Sunday meal.
Mm.
You know, at the end of the day, we are really only human.
And speaking of, you know, you say that you are, you know, you're a human having the human experience. A couple of years ago, you opened up about your experience with alopecia. I think it was three years ago where you said, you know, you'd gone to a hair salon for your wash, and during that wash, there was large chunks of your hair that was gone, and you opened up about your experience with alopecia. Why did you make that decision to share what, again, as you were saying, you know, a perfectly human experience, and you wanted to share, you know, speak about it publicly? Why was that so important?
I think one of our biggest callings as human beings is to be of service. You know, I think that our lives are bigger than acquiring things and working for things. But it's more for me, in my personal, you know, take on it is, it's about relationships. It's about what we build. It's about when you're gone one day, what do people remember you for?
Mm.
And I think apart from things, I would like to remember how I made people feel. I would like to remember, for people to remember me in a way that I gave them permission to be themselves, to be confident in their skin. I remember sitting in their chair, and that's the first thing I said. I said to the hairstylist, he showed me the mirror, and I said, you have to take a picture because I want to share this. And I mean, I didn't share it immediately. I wanted to understand first what was going on, and I wanted to first figure out what happened. In fact, I thought my hair was going to just grow back, and it didn't. And I then had to embark on this journey of figuring out what happened, and eventually ended up with a dermatologist who then, you know, diagnosed the hair loss, which is such an important part of the journey, because a lot of and for that reason, I think I felt the responsibility to be open and to share with other women, because then after I got diagnosed, I saw it everywhere. You literally, you sit at the airport and you're like, oh my goodness, that is traction alopecia, or that is CCA, or that is hair loss of some sort. And I just made it my responsibility to be part of the solution, which is why I also, you know, developed my own product, Ethnogenics, to try and not only come with a solution, but also create a platform where women can have these open and honest conversations. We're told that your hair is your crown, but what happens if you don't have hair, or if you're losing your hair? Do you suddenly lose your crown? Are you suddenly less worthy? You know, and those are all the things that I needed to work through emotionally. It also wasn't just lose your hair, get over it, oh, look at me, I've overcome. It was definitely a journey for me to really of self-discovery and really being learning to be secure in my own skin with or without hair, you know. And I think with that came a lot of empowerment and then wanting to be part of the solution for other women. And it's amazing, you know, what's happening on the Ethnogenics front, just with women coming and inboxing and sending me pictures and being vulnerable and saying, I have a problem, where can I go to get help? So it's bigger than us, you know. For me, it was that moment of understanding that even the hair loss was bigger than me. It was something that God gave me to use to empower and hopefully impart wisdom to other women.
And was your experience with alopecia part of the reason you decided to launch a hair care line with Ethnogenics, or was that always something you'd been thinking about?
No, it was definitely part of the reason. I mean, I had a skincare product 9 years ago that failed, 8 years ago, that didn't do well at all. And so I knew that it's a space I wanted to go into. And I think the hair loss just clarified it, because I must say the difference with the skincare range to this is to Ethnogenics is purpose. You know, I think if we do everything with a why, if there's a reason bigger than yourself, if there's purpose linked to it, I think it's more impactful, and it makes a bigger difference. It's not just I've got a skincare product, but there's a deeper purpose for me that's linked to Ethnogenics, and that's really just wanting to be to form this platform where women can openly and honestly talk about this. It's amazing how debilitating hair loss can be and how many women suffer in silence. And, you know, I had a woman inbox me and say she's getting married in a month and her husband doesn't know she has hair, so she wakes up, she doesn't have hair. She wakes up early and she puts on her duk and she goes back after he's gone to bed, and she, you know, she does all of that whole dance to be able to avoid it. And you realize that this issue is not even so much the hair loss, but what it does to us as women and how we feel the need to hide and cover up and in the process actually make it even worse. So definitely the hair loss sparked the need and desire for me to do my research and understand and then hopefully educate, because a lot of the hair loss that we see in women is actually self-inflicted. Some of it is genetic, but a lot of it is self-inflicted, and it just comes from not knowing that you shouldn't be relaxing and coloring on the same day, or you shouldn't be relaxing and doing cornrows on the same day. You know, just simple things like that, that I think as women, we trust our hairstylists to make that decision for us, but we need to be more equipped with knowledge. And then, you know, the product obviously has hair regrowth properties to help stimulate the regrowth of hair, even though it's not just for women who have experienced hair loss, but it definitely is also just an opportunity to have conversation.
And one of the things I saw with the products is that, you know, they're sulfate-free, they're cruelty-free, they're paraben-free, and, you know, they're intended, they use shea butter. And that was kind of, and for you, that was that from your own personal experience? These are the things you'd found were helpful when you were then, after you were diagnosed with alopecia, were these the things that then helped you regrow your hair?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was diagnosed and I obviously got treatment, which I will always recommend for women to. There's different types of hair loss, and people inbox me and say, I haven't had hair for 10 years. Will your product help me? I don't know what kind of alopecia you have. It's important to get it properly diagnosed. So I was diagnosed and got treatment. But then I needed a product that supported my regrowth, because your scalp then is sensitive and is easily irritated, or the alopecia is easily aggravated, and then you get flare-ups where the hair loss might come back. So for me, it was just important to have a product that would support me on the journey. So a product that is paraben sulfate-free, vegan, and doesn't have properties that would damage my scalp, but then in the process also with a biotin, help stimulate the regrowth of hair where there are hair follicles. And that's why the vitamin was so important, because even the foods that we eat are not as nutritional as they used to be. So it was important to then start supporting my body to be able to regrow hair where there was hair to regrow. Mm-hmm. There is a spot. My alopecia is a scarring alopecia, so there is a spot on the top of my head where my hair doesn't grow back because it's formed a scar. And that is what you need to avoid, is to get it diagnosed and treated before it causes permanent hair loss. So it was important to create a product that was safe and healthy for the regrowth of hair, and support the regrowth of hair, and then partner with, you know, a business that was able to have that footprint to get the product to the woman, because the distribution was a big issue for me. I had a lot of women from all walks of life and all parts of South Africa and beyond saying, where can we get the product? So the Clicks Route made a huge, well, it makes sense. It makes sense for us to distribute through Clicks, so that the product is available and accessible to women.
Yes. Before we wrap up, because we are out of time, I want to read a WhatsApp we received from Yazonda. It says, "You are one of our beautiful actresses. I'm happy to see you acting alongside your hubby on the road. Well done. Keep it up. And may there be more international gigs coming your way." That's from Yazonda in Soweto. And thank you so much for joining us, Gail, this morning.